there are a few things life has to offer that is a great above the rest. Good friends, good food, and a premium handmade cigar from F.K. Christian Pipe Company. All Just Measures Radio listeners get 10% off all singles and 15% off all boxes. And when you order a box, you will also get one of Natty's Selects free. That's right, with every box purchase, you get one of my hand-picked favorites along with 15%. This is a deal that cannot be beat. You can call or email Stacy via the link at Just Measures Radio or JustMeasuresCS.com. F.K. Christen, your premium cigar company. And yes, each one is rolled on the thighs of virgins south of the border.
Welcome to Doc's Freedom Files.
Freedom. Keep walking, keep on your toes, and don't stop talking about freedom.
Have you ever noticed how politicians frequently loosen their tie, roll up their sleeves, and tussle their hair when they try to identify with hardworking, average American voters? It's pure show business, affectation, and political theater, folks. Every rolled cuff and tussled lock of hair is overseen by stylists, handlers, and political henchmen. They're trying to convey an image that says, sadly, for professional reasons, I have to live in the lap of luxury and wear this $2,000 suit, but I'd really rather be digging ditches or picking chicken guts with the regular hard-working folks. Maybe after work, we can go knock back a few cold ones. We're broke, America, busted, in the hole, and have been for a very long time. Our federal debt exceeds all debts of all humanity, dating back to the beginning of time. Everyone knows this. Everyone, except, apparently, our politicians. Poor Democratic Florida Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She and her husband drive about $100,000 in automobiles and own a couple of houses worth a cool $1 million. Her staffers earn between $60,000 and $160,000 per year. Yet the representative recently suggested that budget cuts and rising restaurant costs are pricing her staffers out of a good meal. Tisk tisk. President Obama recently concluded an African tour that estimates say ran over $100 million. You have to wonder how many starving African bellies $100 million might fill. Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. During his 2013 European tour, Vice President Joe Biden dropped a cool $1 million on two nights in a French luxury hotel. Nice work if you can get it. Air Force One, Air Force Two, limousines that weigh as much as a Sherman tank, and all the king's horses and all the king's men. These things leave a carbon footprint somewhere between volcanoes and global gorilla farts. Yet you, deluded, confused, abused, unimportant little American citizens, are told to drive recycled Budweiser cans and live in mean little hovels with summer thermostat settings just below charbroil. Your winter heating bill will be doubled, and your winter thermostat settings inspired by glaciers. All to stop global warming, don't you know? And these things barely scratch the surface of the excesses of our political class. Maybe Wasserman Schultz staffers should drop by the food bank to pick up economy recipe tips from their constituents. Maybe the White House should shut off the air conditioning and get a good African mealie-pap recipe. That's boiled corn mush, the staple of food in sub-Saharan Africa. It's cheap and earth-friendly. Oh, and Joe, next time you need a room, try Motel 6. They'll keep the lights on for you. This is Doc Tubes wishing you life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
And now for something completely different.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black. Tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. You can't take the sky from me. There's no place I can be since I found serenity. But you can't take the sky from me.
Good evening, my friends. Tonight is Saturday night, the 9th of November of 2013, on Just Measures Radio. Welcome to the Tinker Shop. Tonight we're going to be talking about forges. Before we do that, let me go ahead and play another piece of music here that I've always found a little bit inspiring. So, take a listen.
Prometheus, they say, brought God's fire down to man. And we've caught it, tamed it, trained it since our history began. Now we're going back to heaven just to look him in the eye. And there's a thunder across the land and a fire in the sky. Gagarin was the first back in 1961, when like Icarus undaunted he climbed to reach the sun. And he knew he might not make it, for it's never hard to die. But he lifted off the path and rode a fire in the sky. Yet a higher goal was calling and we vowed to reach it soon. And we gave ourselves a decade to put fire on the moon. And Apollo told the world we could do it if we tried. Small step and a fire in the sky. I dreamed last night of a little boy's cruise of space flies turned into me, watching a black and white. There was a fire higher in the sky. I'll remember until I die. A fire higher in the sky. A fire in the sky. Then 2 decades from Gagarin, 20 years to the day, came a shuttle named Columbia to open up the way. And they said she's just a truck, but she's a truck that's aiming high. See her big jets burn and see her fire in the sky. Yet the gods do not give lightly of the powers they have made. And with Challenger and Seven, once again the price is paid. Though a nation watch her falling, yet a world could only cry as they pass from us to glory, riding fire in the sky. Now the rest is up to us, and there's a future to be won. We must turn our faces outward, we will do what must be done. For no cradle lasts forever. Every bird must learn to fly. And we're going to the stars. See our fire.
So, as I said, my friends, here we are, Saturday evening, once again, 9 p.m. on Just Measures Radio, and we're here tonight to talk about that which brought forth the fire in the sky, forging. Of course, what we're going to be talking about is a lot simpler than what they did to get the man in space program going, but we have to remember those guys too. Tonight we're going to talk about a few different kinds of forges. Break drum forge, and the portable forge that I built for traveling work. It's charcoal fired. Then we have the wooden box forge, as I mentioned a couple weeks ago, that we're going to talk about for a while. And then gas forges, which are pretty much a modern innovation. And finally, last but not least, is the old-time coal forges. And I will be using a coal farrier's forge as an example. First thing we'll need to do is go out to our web page, which is located at www.arlen-tower.com/tinkers_shop/forges.htm. And what I'm going to do is I'm also going to go ahead and take and drop this link into the chat room. So that way people will be able to go ahead and follow along. So, like I said, first thing, break drum forge. That is one forge that a lot of times people have been recommended to build as a first forge. I don't necessarily advise it. And many people push beginners or beginning blacksmiths to start with a break drum forge. They would have a beginner believe that the break drum forge and a cheap hair dryer are really all that you need, or that it'd be a good substitute for a real blacksmith's bottom draft or bottom blast forge with a blower. The work that's done with a break drum forge is usually of the simpler design S hooks, tent stakes, and like railroad spike knives. Some tent hangers, which are basically a U-shaped type of thing. You know, things that don't require a lot of concentrated heat. You know, that'll be just in a small area that where you can bend things fairly easily. It's better to learn how the best forges work and how to build something that functions much like a professional's blacksmith's forge. A break drum forge is really only suited to the production of small things because of the limitations that are inherent in it. The biggest limitation is the diameter versus the depth of a break drum. Quite often, you cannot put larger objects in, and how best to put it. For any projects of a decent size, you should have a coal depth, and I'm talking about the burning coals here, a coal depth of roughly 7 inches. This is over half the width of most brake drums. Because of this, you have to have an extreme hazard of hot coals falling out of the fire pot and ending up underfoot. And you just don't have any place to put your fire tools either, you know, to keep them close to hand. This first picture here is actually it's a forge which I had originally built, or a break drum forge, and I found out very quickly when I built it that it just didn't have the, like I said, the depth for, or the width for having a decent pile of coals there. The way I had originally had it was I had the drum sitting on a 2 foot square table that I'd covered with sheet aluminum, and it had the same setup that you can see here underneath this. This person who I passed it along to when I said, no, this isn't going to work. He says, I want that. And so it's basically, looks like what's on the next picture over to the right. You have the brake drum there, and you see like a piece of inch and a half pipe coming down, going into a T, and then going off to the right. Below that is what's called a close nipple, which is basically a piece of pipe that's threaded the whole way. That gets turned into the T shape, and on that it gets a cap put into place to act as an ash dump or a clinker removal point. And if you go down just a little bit further on the page, you'll see both a brake drum on the right side, and in the center you have a pipe flange. Now, pipe flange is what basically gets bolted up to the brake drum base. Once you get that bolted up on there, then you'd have to turn the brake drum around so you have it basically cupped or open to where you can see the inside, and you'd have to put in basically a fire grate of some sort. A lot of people use a piece of cast iron from like a 4-inch cast iron fry pan. They'll take and cut the handle off, so you just end up with basically a circular dish of cast iron. In there, they'll go ahead and drill a lot of holes. Basically, you end up putting about 25 to 35 quarter-inch holes, basically in concentric circles coming out. Once you have all those holes drilled in, at that point you can put that in upside down over that opening where the center of the brake drum was at. This would basically give you your air gate or your pass-through for air. What happens then is the brake drum is taken and is packed with clay or dirt or even fire clay to give you a bowl shape. This bowl shape that you end up with is more or less, a lot of people refer to it as a duck's nest. And this is where your fire will actually be burning when you do it. Now we're going to go back here just a little bit. Like I'd mentioned, you have, on this particular one here, you have this, the T, and actually there's two close nipples. One goes into your pipe flange, the other one comes out the other side of the T. And like I said, you have another piece of pipe running out to the right, which is where your air is injected into the fire. And obviously you have to have some sort of stand to prop the brake drum up to where you can get at it to work with it. So with all that said, obviously you've probably drawn the conclusion by now that a brake drum forge probably is not your best bet if you want to do any serious blacksmithing. Okay, at this point here, we're probably pretty close to a break time. So I'm going to go ahead and put a couple pieces of music in here just for you to listen to, and also give me a chance to go ahead and refill my coffee cup. After the music's over, we'll come back and we'll look at my pride and joy, my home-built charcoal forge, which was made for traveling. So, please, enjoy the music, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
We are a band of brothers and native to the soil, fighting for our liberty with treasure, blood, and toil. And when our rights are threatened, the cry rose near and far. Hurrah for the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star. Hurrah, hurrah for southern rights, hurrah. Hurrah for the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star. Hurrah, hurrah for southern rights, hurrah. Hurrah for the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star. As long as the Union
union was faithful to her trust. Like friends and like brethren, kind were we and just. But now when northern treachery attempts our rights to mar, we hoist on high the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star. Hurrah, hurrah, for southern rights, hurrah. Hurrah for the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star. Hurrah, hurrah, for southern rights, hurrah. Hurrah for the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star. First gallant South Carolina nobly made the stand. Then came Alabama, who took her by the hand. Next quickly Mississippi, Georgia, and Florida. All raised on high the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star. Hurrah, hurrah, for southern rights, hurrah. Hurrah for the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star. Hurrah, hurrah, for southern rights, hurrah. Hurrah for the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star. Ye men of valor, gather round the banner of the right. Texas and fair Louisiana, join us in the fight. Davis, our loved president, and Stephen, statesman rare. Now rally round the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star. Hurrah, hurrah, for southern rights, hurrah. Hurrah for the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star. Hurrah, hurrah, for southern rights, hurrah. A single star. And here's to brave Virginia, the old Dominion state. With the young Confederacy at length has linked her fate. Impelled by her example, now other states prepare to hoist on high the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star. Hurrah, hurrah, for southern rights, hurrah. A single star. Hurrah, hurrah, for southern rights, hurrah. Hurrah for the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star. Then cheer, boys, cheer now, raise the joyous shout. For Arkansas and North Carolina now have both gone out. And let another rousing cheer for Tennessee be given. The single star of the bonnie blue flag has grown to be 11. Hurrah, hurrah, for southern rights, hurrah. Blue flag has gained the 11th star. Hurrah, hurrah, for southern rights, hurrah. Hurrah, for the bonnie blue flag has gained the 11th star. Then here's to our Confederacy, strong we are and brave. Like patriots of old, we'll fight our heritage to save. And rather than submit to shame, to die we would prefer. So cheers for the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star. Hurrah, hurrah, for southern rights, hurrah. Hurrah for the bonnie blue flag has gained the 11th star. Hurrah, hurrah for southern rights, hurrah. Hurrah for the bonnie blue flag has gained the 11th star.
Guns, self-defense, survival, current events, and your future.
Can't take me. Yeah!
We're rapidly approaching desperate times. Have you prepared your family physically, mentally, spiritually to face these times? Tyrant has overstepped his authority. What will you do when he comes to your door?
You can't take me, I'm free.
Please join us here on Just Measures Radio Network for The Shooting Bench, Monday through Friday, 5 p.m.
Pacific Time.
It's easy to take liberty for granted when you've never had it taken from you.
Okay, well, I'm back, and hopefully I'm live now. Welcome, Conk. Glad you can make it in. Yes, so Here we go. Oh, yes. Let's see. Trying to think here. Back here, a couple minutes back, you'd asked me about brake drums on forges. Like I was saying in the previous part, brake drums really aren't the preferred method. Yeah, I had to include them because a lot of people get the advice, well, if you're going to get started blacksmithing, you know, get yourself a brake drum, you know, figure out a way of blowing some air through it and all that. And it works. I admit it will work, but you do have a problem. Like I was trying to explain before, it's with a brake drum, usually you're anywhere from, say, 12 to 14 inches in diameter. And if you're trying to build up a pile of coals that are 7 inches high, it's running into that pyramid that was discussed the other night. I think it was on Cope Show when Matt Bracken was on. They were saying about, you know, things get piled up and eventually, you know, the whole sand heap wants to collapse. You can get the same darn thing with charcoal or coal when it's burning. And believe me, if you get a shower of hot coals falling down around your feet, it gets rather uncomfortable. So, and also, like I mentioned, that forge, when I had originally built the brake drum one, it was actually, I'd built a metal table out of angle iron and flat aluminum and basically had the whole brake drum sitting on top. It worked, but it wasn't optimal. Or, let's see, I'm trying to remember the NASA term for it. I think they call something nominal. It wasn't nominal. You could have problems with it. So I like I said, I learned fairly quickly. I needed something a little bit better. And so now, once I hit that point here, let me go ahead and jump back over to my page, Forges. And, like I said, I was figured we'd go ahead and talk about my home-built forge. And this one was designed for use with charcoal, because I had decided long time back charcoal was a lot more neighbor-friendly than coal was. Coal, like I mentioned last week, when you first start it up and when you're coking it off, you get this lovely green-gray baby barf color smoke coming off of it, which can be nasty. So it's, to me, charcoal is the way to go. Brake drum forges are not optimal, and what I came up with was something a little bit in between size, because I used to carry to SCA events, Ren Fairs, rendezvous, I used to carry a large forge with me. It was a cast iron one. The metal itself was probably between half and three quarters of an inch thick. And the exterior dimensions on it was about a little over 2 foot wide and about 3 foot long. Had a large pump handle on it. What it looked like was a wheelbarrow with a pump handle on it, which drove a blower underneath. And after hauling that around for about 2 or 3 years, you know, fragile cast iron, it decided to crack on me. I did repair it, and I went, no, this thing's going to be a shop queen from now on. It's going to stay put. And so I got busy and built a new forge. And if you look at this section here, where I have, you know, my portable forge, yeah, the top row of pictures in the middle, it's actually my forge and blower setup I have. It was at one event I was at, and obviously you can't see it real well there. The blower's in the foreground with a pipe running out underneath and heading back to the forge itself. To the right side, there's another shot of it where it's, basically sitting there, you know, the opposite side of the blower and the opposite end of the forge. And on the two photos, the forge looks a little bit different. I have, on the second photo there, I have what's been referred to as wings. And these wings actually slip on the edge to allow the coals and the fire to be deeper in there. It's those wings actually give me an additional 6 inches of depth. So I can actually, if I want to in this particular forge, I can go up to a depth of about 9 or 10 inches of burning coals. And with that much coals in there, and with that blower, I can literally melt steel. I've had it happen accidentally. Had a couple of volunteers at one event who wanted to help and crank the blower for me. And they had it so hot that one piece of half-inch square stock that I was going to be making a shepherd's hook out of, they actually melted it on me. So needless to say, that particular project I had to just start over again. Let's see here. If we go down here to the bottom left, get another view of the blower. And that blower is on a custom stand that I had ordered up originally used by way of eBay. And that started life. It's a Canada Forge and Blower Company. Blower, I believe it is. And it literally, I bought it from Canada. There was a farm out in Manitoba. And the guy was selling it, I think it was probably less than $100 all told. Counting shipping, I paid probably $125 for it. And had it shipped in. And it came to me in all of its rusted pig flop encrusted glory. And literally disassembled it, cleaned it up, and repainted it. Got it, and basically got it working. Built that nice little three-legged stand for it, and proceeded to take muffler pipe couplings, which is what you see coming down and at an angle, you know, bringing it to a right angle out from underneath it. And that's about an inch and three-quarter hose. And that inch and three-quarter hose goes on to a coupling setup very similar to what was used above here for the brake drum forge. And it puts out quite a bit of air. That blower actually is probably, I'd say 1.5 to 2 times larger than it really needs to be. But I always figure that more is better. Because with this particular one, I can just stand there and just gently turn it, and that's enough to get the fire going and get it hot enough to where I can work with the metal. The shape on this particular forge is a dual-purpose one. You know, if you, again, looking at the middle photo and the one to the right, you can undoubtedly see that this is almost like a half of a shoebox cut off diagonally. It's V-shaped. And at the bottom of the V is where the air tube comes in at. And it has its own welded steel fire grate in there. The reason that it's so long is because I've, in the past, I've had requests from people either to straighten, you know, like large tent stakes or shepherd's hooks. And also I've been known to use this for large knife making. And on the right-hand picture, you can see where there's looks like a little semicircular cutout. Again, that cutout is at the same height as a shelf that's at the opposite end. In the middle picture, you can sort of see it on the left-hand side. It's like a shelf, to where the top of the shelf is lined up with the lower portion of that round hole, or the semicircle in the far end. Also, please note that the entire body of the forge is seated on its own rack and separate legs. The forge, in and of itself, was actually cut out of 3/16-inch sheet metal, and it was done, believe it or not, with a circular saw using a metal cutting blade. Just basically laid the things out across some 2x4s just like one would do with a piece of plywood in cutting the shape. Once I had the shapes cut to size, then I proceeded to go ahead and weld them up and weld them together. Obviously, most people don't have a welder, but quite often you could find someone who is able to do the welding for you. I imagine at this point I should probably go ahead and give you a little bit more history of how I came to build a traveling forge. Originally, what I used when I was going to SCA events, rendezvous, and Renaissance fairs, I hauled around a very large, very heavy cast iron forge. It was probably anywhere from 1/2 to 3/4 of an inch thick cast iron, both the body and the fire pot on it. It was about 2 foot wide, close to 3 foot long, and actually had a pump handle type of blower on it, where it literally looked like I was pumping water. And that mechanism was a notched gear system that would drive a belt which drove the blower for feeding air to the fire. Like I said, I hauled that around for 2 or 3 years, and one day at one of the events got caught in a sudden rain shower. We'd had good steady winds most of the morning and actually had air funneling very well into the forge. And all of a sudden, the wind switched by about 90 degrees, and we had a rain shower. And that was just enough of a sudden chill, which actually cracked the forge. Sounded like a gun going off. Actually, I found myself, when the thing went off, I hit the dirt. And just looking around, everybody else was looking my way going, "What's going on over there?" And I kind of looked up and went, and saw that the cast iron forge had actually split itself open. It was split on one side all the way to the tool yard. And on the outside edge was actually split out to about almost an inch wide. So needless to say, I had to scrape the coals away and do some quickie repairs there at the event that day. But brought it home, welded it up, and just went, "I don't know if I dare take this thing out again." With my luck, I was figuring with my luck that it would probably split all the way across the next time and be totally broken. So at that point, I decided, it's time to build myself something a little bit more modern, or at least with modern materials. And that's how I came up with the design for this new forge, which is much lighter. I can literally pick up and carry the whole thing, and can not have to worry about it shattering if it gets a sudden chill. See, if we go back to the central picture again, if you look in the background of that, on the left side, you see what looks like a table there, and this is kind of going back to the brake drum forge that I talked about earlier. I just had noticed this here in the photo. That's the table I had made from welded up angle iron. Covered it with aluminum sheet, and the what appears to be a break drum on there is actually the break drum that showed up in the first set of photos I used here tonight. And like I said, this was a method I tried to get to use a break drum forge to where it was usable. It was somewhat usable. I was able to have a place to lay my tools and also a surface for any hot coals that fell out to land on. But again, like I said, once I had been using it for a while, I realized this just wasn't quite what I wanted, and I decided I'd go ahead and build this other new traveling forge, which actually has worked much better for me. Okay, now, at this point, we're going to kind of change things up here a little bit and kind of rearrange my order here. So go ahead and scroll all the way down to the bottom of the page to the Coal Farrier's Forge. This is sometimes also known as the Riveting Forge. And this is a modern update to the traditional Farrier's Forge. This one uses a variable speed electric motor to drive the motor. And the air from the blower is fed through and past the ash dump or ash gate, aka the tuyer, to the actual fire pot. Traditionally, these used a hand crank blower because many farriers would travel to the horses, which needed to be shod. In most cases, electric power was not available on site because this might be out in a field or out on a farm, and power many times was not available or isn't available. Obviously, in the past, back before electricity made its public appearance, the only thing people would have would be a hand crank blower, similar to the one that I use on my traveling forge. Now, this traveling forge here is fairly typical of many of the forges one sees these days, you know, in shape and height. The fire pot in there, like I said, is usually probably about 6 inches deep, maybe at least 10 inches around. And this allows getting a good solid bed of coals that you can actually heap up to be able to put your metal in. And the pan itself is roughly 20 to 24 inches in diameter. This gives an area for unburned coal or charcoal to be stored that you move in towards the area where you have your pot of fire at. And what generally is done when you're putting metal into a fire, once you have a good bed of coals there, you try to set the area that you're going to be working with that you're trying to heat roughly about 2 or 3 inches up from the bottom of the fire pot. This is probably the cleanest and hottest zone of the fire. If you have it any higher than that, or if you have too low a pile of coals, it has a tendency of drawing more oxygen in from the outside air, and hot metal does not react well to excess oxygen. If you have too hot a fire and you have too much oxygen coming in, you can actually burn your metal. So that, again, is a not good thing. Next, we're going to go ahead and move up one more notch here to the gas forges section. On the central picture here, what you see is a group of people who are using a natural gas or LP forge for heating their metal to work with it. And this forge here is one that's actually designed or is more suited for larger pieces of metal or larger pieces of work, longer pieces. And if you look over to the right-hand side, you have I did kind of a small blow-up of the forge itself, and in this you can see that the port in the side of the forge to where they can actually fit a long piece of metal through there. In this case, you could easily fit say a 8 or 10 foot long chunk of say half inch square stock through there to be able to do twists in it for like when you're making a large shepherd's hook. And if you look at that, this is a outdoor shot taken during the daytime, and you can actually see that the fire brick inside are actually glowing yellow hot. And when you can heat up a fire brick to the point where it's glowing yellow, you know you're putting out some good heat. And actually, if you look up at the top of forge there, you can see this is actually a double forge or a double burner forge, and it has some very large piping going in, and with that, the two what look like tin cans in there are actually mixing chambers where the compressed gas is fed in, mixes with oxygen, and actually blows right on through those pipes and down into the forge where it's burning. If you look down one more row here, you'll see examples of two smaller forges. And these two smaller forges, they're front-loading gas forges. And those are from Centaur Forge, which is located here in Wisconsin. They're one of the larger blacksmithing supply places in the country. And if you look at the left-hand one, as you can see, the left-hand one uses a single burner, and the one on the right is a double burner setup. Both of these are natural gas or LP gas fired. The smaller one will work obviously for smaller pieces. It does not generate as much heat, so would be working with smaller and thinner pieces of metal. The next one over is a larger one. With having two burners on it, it generates at least twice as much heat as that little one does. And as you can see, it's appreciably larger, the chamber in there for putting your metal into heat. This will handle larger objects. This sort of one would probably work quite well for knife making and things of that nature. Another side note here. I also have a gas forge myself that I've built. And it's using a burner design done by a guy up in Alaska who goes by the handle of Frosty. And he's designed what's commonly known as Frosty's tea burner. Perhaps at a later date, if people are interested in the possibility of building a gas forge, I can go ahead and actually do up a complete page just on burner design and how to build a gas forge. Last but not least, we come to the wood box forge. This is what is sometimes called a mud box or wooden forge. And these are quite efficient and a relatively cheap forge. These are known worldwide, been used for a long time. They're probably the most historical form of forge. What it is basically is a wooden box with a pipe or tube coming in from one side, which ends in your duck's nest or your hollow, your fire pot area of the forge. And the way it's built is the box is filled with wet dirt or mud or clay, which is the preferred method. And the clay is basically hammered into place. It's put in just damp and pounded down. And as you build up the layers in there, you build up your fire pot area around the end of the pipe. The rest of it is just hammered in and filled up to the level of the top of the box. Once you have the clay, mud, dirt mixture put in place and hammered in, you have to let it dry for a while. And after you've let it dry for several hours or a couple days, you can go ahead and build a small fire in there to start with wood chips, grass, whatever. So what you want to do there is bake the clay and form a hard surface to work with. The fire pot that you build in there, again, should ideally be roughly of a depth where you can get a pile at least 7 inches high of hot coals. When you have that height there, again, like I'd mentioned before, this gives you the ideal zone for working with metal, where you can heat it to a good yellow heat without having any worry of, you know, burning the metal up. And so if we go ahead and look down here a little bit further, You can see that the box is very simple in construction. It's just an open box on a stand. And both ends, as you can see, have been relieved somewhat. Again, this is so you can lay longer pieces of metal in there to make sure that they stay seated in the fire. And the area around the fire pot is, again, where one would store the coal so it does not fall off onto the ground. The picture over to the right, you can see that's a relatively simple blower. There's not a lot holding it in place. It's just a shelf holding the pipe going in, the tooler going into the fire pot, and the blower is attached to that. And this blower looks a little bit different than the one that I use on my traveling forge, but in a way it's basically the same. It works on the same principle. Blowers are of varying sizes. Some are larger, some are smaller. And they all perform the same function. Like I said earlier, this type of design is found all over the world, and it does use natural materials, and it obviously can be sized to whatever your anticipated task is that you want to perform. You can also look at this same design, and it's very similar to the old Viking pit forge that I had mentioned the first night, but this is a way of building a Viking pit forge up to a standing or a workable height. And one final note in this section here, the larger picture here at the top where you see a full wood forge, you know, obviously modern built. But on the left side you see an anvil stump there, and on that anvil stump, this person actually uses a block anvil, like I talked about. Remember I'd said that the earliest anvils were basically just either a block of iron or stone, and the ones with the horns on them were a later development. And so this is a very good example of that. That said, this brings us to the end of the Tinker's Shop for the 9th of November, 2013, on Just Measures Radio. Thank you very much, have a very good weekend, and God bless.
And in the name of flood control, They made their plans and they drained the land. Now the glades are going dry. And the last time I walked in the swamp, I sat up on a cypress stump. I listened close and I heard the ghost of Osceola cry. So blow, blow, Seminole wind, blow like you're never gonna blow again. I'm calling to you like a long lost friend, but I know who you are. And blow, blow from the Okeechobee all the way up to Micanopy. Blow across the home of the Seminole, the alligators and the gulls.
The library for those who come after us. We must never forget to teach those who need our knowledge.
Just Measures Radio is on the air.